first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. Welcome to the Football Podcast. We are in a different location today, but five of us around the table again. I'm Simon Head. Joining me are Stuart Hall.
Afternoon.
Dan Ferdinand.
Hello.
Michael Coxon.
Hello.
And Jim Staples.
Hello.
And we'll kick straight off with two questions from our sister show, Royal One Radio in Scotland. If Darren Bent was willing to go to Aston Villa for 18 million quid, what other unspeakable acts will you do for the same money? Now, I know most of this is probably going to get edited out. So, Jim?
I don't really understand the question. They didn't give him 80 million to go, did they? That was the price.
I think basically, he's getting it.
Someone's willing to pay.
He's basically trebling his salary pretty much to Aston Villa.
Okay.
Well, so if you were having your money trebled, what would you do that went against your principles?
I'd do anything. I'd do pretty much anything. If I was getting paid to play professional football anyway,
yeah,
I'd probably do anything for that in itself.
Yeah.
So to get paid triple what I was getting paid for it.
Why not?
Yeah. I play for Maidstone United, triple the money.
But Villa, I don't know about that. Villa are a bigger club than Sunderland anyway.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
In terms of stature historically, then
when I look at Villa, I think of them as a bigger club than Sunderland.
So in terms of size of support, I'd say it was more of a sideways step, but financially, career wise, it's a better move for him.
Okay, and the only other thing I've got to say on that as well is Steve Bruce, who I do like because he's a good guy and he's a fantastic defender, but he's an absolute muppet. To come out and start talking about loyalty, every club he's left to go and join and manage another team.
Yeah.
He's pretty much left every club in the shit that he's ever managed.
Yeah.
So to come out and say Bent's let his teammates down and he's clutted his fans down. Yeah, give it a rest, Bruce.
Mike?
For 18 million, I'd sign two high-quality European players.
Okay.
Oh, what about the English game, eh, mate?
Oh, no, don't worry.
That is the other question, actually, which we'll touch on in a minute. Dan?
I'm actually going to make no comment because I don't want to get myself in any legal or personal trouble.
Okay, moving swiftly on to Stuart.
No, if I had 18 million, an unspeakable act, I'd maybe dress up like a superhero and just hand out £1,000 rolls to people.
I wouldn't call that an unspeakable act, I'd call it quite a nice thing.
Didn't T-Mobile do something similar for
an act?
They just threw money.
Stuart, if you're dressing up as a superhero, what sort of costume? I hope it's tight.
Hold on, because
it's going to be tight.
I'd want to be
Banana Man.
It can't be Banana Man, because Jim's already done it.
Already done that.
Dangerous Brian.
Stuart dressed up as Banana Man, I'd give 80 million to see that. It's quite tight.
Have you got 18 million?
That's quite tight.
Have you got 18 million?
Yeah, do you not know?
Have you got a Batman outfit?
I could probably get one.
Yeah, I could probably get 18 million.
I'd see more Robin, to be honest.
What, the homosexual?
Especially if there's no Batman, he's just still got to be Robin.
That's it, he's
Robin, more fun. Robbie Coltrane. He's not happy with that, look.
We'll move on to the other question they asked. Again, referring to the Darren Bent thing. Bent cost 18 million, James Milner cost 18 million, Glenn Johnson cost 18 million, Raphael van der Vaart, not English, 8 million. Should English club buy English players when they're overpriced? Dan?
Start with me, because we don't try not to do that. I think the point I kind of wanted to make really was on the Bent situation, I would say actually he is actually worth the money.
Mm.
Had they have had Bent last season, I actually think that they'd have been much closer, even potentially making the top, the fourth place last year. The reason why I say that is because they finished 6-3 times on the bounce. Darren Bent, since 2006, I think it is, has scored 82
he's
goals.
Scored a few
before the weekend, so it's 83.
Averages 1-2.
Which was actually, before the weekend's games, the same as Rooney and Drogba. Actually, he's now gone one ahead since that period of time. So we're talking about Rooney being a £30 million player when he was unproven, and Drogba was 24, 25,
yeah, 24.
When he went to Chelsea. Actually, that's a blinding bit of business. And then on premise that his first game, he scores the only goal of the game for them to beat Man City.
With his only shot.
We're massively under the cosh. I think he starts replaying that straight away. Obviously, this season's not gone well, but that's what I wanted to make. Oh, also, and Van der Vaart was being bombed out of Real. So it wasn't really, it's not 8 million,
yeah,
is what it's worth.
Yeah.
It was 8 million because that's
really... He wasn't playing in their squad, so...
But there is there does tend to be a bit of a premium on English players' transfer fees. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about Charlie Adam this week. He handed in a transfer request this morning.
Has that been handed in now?
It's been handed in, yeah. Liverpool are probably going to need... Well, I mean, Ian Holloway yesterday said any number they put, they're going to have to put a one in front of it. So he's looking for a five... You know, he's basically looking for a £10 million fee.
I think that's what he'll go for.
To get him. You know? Is he worth 10 million quid? Really?
No. Well, it's
Jimmy Bullard's better than him.
Yeah, but it's his value
Bullard
to Blackpool.
Can't walk.
It's his value to Blackpool. His value to Blackpool's best part of £50 million.
They lose him and they go down.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but, like, I just think English players, I think also you've also remember, they've also got an added value to, in terms of marketing. You have to be a real, real world-class foreign player. I think anyone else isn't great. An average show, you've got a bonus.
Darren Bent's not going to sell many T-shirts.
No, I don't know. He will.
No. I've not yet seen.
Not unless
Darren
he's retired
Bent.
And selling him on a high street somewhere, like Del Boy. I wouldn't buy a T-shirt of Darren Bent.
I'd buy a Darren Bent quilt cover. I think that'd be quite good.
I'd buy you a Darren Bent T-shirt if you just said Bent over it.
That's oh, I've already got one of them.
Which brings me on to Goodwillie. Cardiff are trying to sign Goodwillie from, is it Dundee?
Yeah, I think it's Dundee or Dundee United.
I hope they do, because I'm going to get, my friend is a Cardiff fan, a shirt with Goodwillie on the back of it.
100%.
Yeah. He has got a few personal issues that I believe he needs to sort out before any kind of move out.
Ooh, my friend.
Yeah, I was going to say. Both. But
on a Villa front as well, did you watch a game?
Yes,
I did. Albrighton. It was amazing. Again, English.
The guy who impressed me actually was James Collins, big ginger guy at the back.
Yeah, Welsh.
Okay, we'll move on to the weekend. Obviously, much to talk about. How did you see the weekend, Mike?
Enjoyable.
Yeah.
5-0 win. You can't complain with that.
Yeah.
Berbatov playing well. Ryan Giggs playing like he's 21 again. Absolutely fantastic. I quite like the fact that Ferguson ended up throwing on Michael Owen when we were 4-0 up. So we had 3 strikers and 2 attacking midfielders on the pitch, which was nice and positive to us trying. Kill a team rather than slacking off.
Kenny Dalglish got his first win.
Yeah, and fair play to him. They were
didn't they play well as well?
Yeah,
they actually started passing the ball. That's the massive. And they're playing Real Morelos where Gerrard plays, and he's looking pretty useful in that team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when Gerrard gets back,
especially when Charlie Adams comes.
And Charlie Adams
as well. As poor as Torres has looked this season, he has now scored more goals than Drogba, I believe, in the league.
Yeah.
He's
just looks disinterested at
times. He looks disinterested.
He's brilliant, isn't he? So.
But he's scoring goals. Fair play to him.
And we got a bit more on that game, or a side issue of that game, a bit later on. So we'll talk about that.
I wanted to talk about that.
Okay.
Picky on getting sent off was quite funny as well.
Yeah. I felt sorry for the ref, because he had no option but to send him off.
Yeah.
I didn't feel sorry for anyone. I found it all hilarious.
I found it hilarious too.
It was funny. It was funny. But, so it's... How did the Gunners get on?
Yeah, we had... I say we had a tough game. It wasn't as probably easy as the 3-0 suggests, but we did create a lot of chances. Yeah. We generally do that against Wigan at home.
Wait, Wigan, I thought you were playing Ali Al-Habsi.
It kind of seemed like that away. Van Persie missed a penalty really badly. It was
still
worst,
travelling, isn't it?
It was one
it's
of the worst penalties
in the World Cup.
Yeah. It was
going to collide with Rooney's from the United Arsenal game.
It was pretty awful, but
hat-trick.
And I think we played well. I'd also like to make another point just about Theo Walcott. His final ball, his overall play has been fantastic, although he did make one big mistake where he threw on goal, he tried to pass it to Fabregas. And that's the one thing he just needs to get out of his game. He needs to be more deadly, more selfish, sorry. But yeah, we played well. It was right.
Excellent.
The other thing from the weekend, we've got to mention it, Andy Gray.
Oh,
and, what do you reckon? We're in the pub at lunchtime, right? What aren't they in the pub?
They probably aren't now. They've just been suspended. They're not on Monday night football tonight. It'll be interesting to see whether they're suspended or whether they're actually bombed out.
To be honest, I'd rather have Jeff Stelling present it than Richard Keys.
I would. It's a bit matey these days. It's Jamie Redknapp, Andy Gray, Richard Keys. It's all a little, it's like a little flipping old boys club at the moment.
Well, that's what it is.
I'll be honest, I back them all the way I like them. I don't think what they said was actually that bad.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
What's been glossed over is the lineswoman made an excellent decision.
Bang on.
Fair play to her.
Good stuff.
And the other thing of the weekend, Jim, you and Stu.
I took advantage of a free ticket. I think I was Natalie Hoare at the weekend.
You were Natalie Hoare.
I was Stu's sister yesterday. We went along to QPR. Coventry.
It was
quite good actually. I quite enjoyed watching Stuart going to the smallest seating area in the world as a 6 foot. How old are you? 6 foot.
Six,
how old are you? How tall are you?
6'6".
6'6" in the seats that are made for like a 6-year-old was quite funny.
Or younger, probably, I'd say.
That was probably a highlight. We've got some audio as well, which I think you're going to feed in. After they scored their winner, I didn't know whether it was Routledge that scored or not because the view wasn't great. So I just turned to Stuart and he's on the audio. Stuart, who scored? Was it Routledge? Stuart responded with, "Yes." He wasn't making any sense whatsoever. Yeah, it's fantastic.
He got a little bit. He got a little bit happy.
It just captures a man at a football game when his team has just scored. Not making. He was just shaking me, going, "Yes."
I just watched bits of that game, and I'd just like to say, Sean Derry is about 1,000 years old, but he was.
He's mustard.
Absolutely mustard.
I put him as my man of the match. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I'm like that man in the toilet who was definitely touting Ishmael Miller as his man of the match.
Let's not talk about the toilets. The other good thing from the game as well is that at half time, the guy we were with sitting between has got a text from his girlfriend, and Tabrat has just scored. And it said, "Hi, sweetie. Fantastic that your favourite player just scored. Well done. Kiss." Stuart Hall got a text from his girlfriend at the same time, and it just said, "Tell the ref he's a wanker." That was it. The two different sides of the girlfriends, which was absolutely
brilliant.
Beautiful.
And yeah, we got some audio from that, and you can hear that now.
All right, Stuart, score predictions. Couple of minutes till kickoff. What are you thinking?
I'm going to go 3-0 today, mate. Couple of new signings. I reckon Routledge will be starting. As long as Marlon King gets kicked up in the air early doors, I can't see us having a problem, mate.
All right, so you think 3-0?
3-0 Rangers.
I'm back with Sewell. It's half time. It's 1-1. You don't look happy, mate. What's wrong?
And Marlon King's been absolutely abused first half, and it was inevitable he was going to score. Didn't
in fact, I tweeted it, and 4 minutes after my tweet went out, he scored.
I just hope you don't do an Andy Cole's or hat trick against us. That would be appalling.
I don't think he's got a hat trick in him, but 1-1's not bad. You scored just for half time, so exactly. An important goal. Tarat as well.
Yeah, brilliant. I don't know what the keeper was doing, but a good goal nonetheless.
Absolutely. First time I've actually seen him play live, I think.
He's not bad, is he?
He does a bit. He does a bit. Sometimes he does a player extra than he needs
much.
To. But I think it's hopefully he'll be in the Premiership next season with you guys, because I think a few more people need to see him in a worldwide sort of audience and whatever. But
I reckon we should win the second half, shouldn't we? I can't see any reason why we wouldn't.
We'll see. See in a bit.
In a bit, mate.
Oh! Yes! Routledge, wasn't it? Yes! It was Routledge. 2-1 Rangers. They're top of the league, apparently. Happier now, sir. Bit happier.
Much, mate. Much happier.
The great goal. Full time, sir.
Bit tough at the end, mate, but 2-1.
Happy?
Very.
Right, it's time to look at the Football Pubcast 11 now. We're on to centre-halves. Now, what we're going to do, because we've got two centre-backs, what we've basically done to look at the past and present, we're going to pick a legend this week. We're going to nominate our legend players this week. Next week, we'll have a currently playing centre-half.
What about the left-backs?
But first, thank you, Dan, we have the results from last week. In fourth place, with 1.89% of the vote, was Ashley Cole.
Yes!
1.89%, not the most popular. Very good player, not very popular, so he came in fourth.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
He was in there for valid reasons.
Yeah,
I wanted him to be in there, but
so.
I wasn't expecting him to.
I think there were more popular players on the list.
I was going to say it's a popularity contest, but Gary Neville got a vote.
Exactly.
It doesn't really sum itself up, does it?
In third place, with 7.55% of the vote, again a low amount, Roberto Carlos.
Oh, Thunderpass.
Paul's man came in second, which left Stuart Pearce and Paolo Maldini duking out for first.
Similar players,
yeah.
Similar silverware.
They both have legs.
Two peas from a pod. Second place got 28.3%, which meant the winner romped it with 62.26% of the vote. And the winner, and our left back in our Pubcast 11, is Stuart Pearce.
Oh, good on, Stewie.
I'm very surprised by that, not least because I nominated him and I didn't think I'd get a single player.
I nominated him as well.
Yeah. So, and you
it's probably because of me, basically.
Yeah.
Well done, Dan.
I do believe one of the reasons why we did so well is somebody tweeted it to BBC Radio Nottingham, who then retweeted it to everybody in the Greater Nottingham area.
Lush.
And we got a bit of an influx of votes, and I think it's largely because of
now
that.
If we can make little trophies for all the players behind, he's got something to put in with all the passion in
all
his
the
trophies.
All that passion.
There you go.
So we've got Casillas in goal, Gary Neville right back, Stuart Pearce left back.
We're going to need some bloody good centre half.
Which moves us on nicely to our centre back. Okay, Jim, do you want to kick things off?
Okay. My nomination, born on the 5th December 1959. My nomination played in the top flight between 1982 and 1996. He won the FA Cup once, the League Cup twice, was voted the PFA Player of the Year in 1993. So I can see everyone's now looking at me going, who the hell is this? He's not the most decorated of players.
It's Steve Foster from Luton, is it?
It's not Steve Foster from Luton. Retired in 1998 due to ongoing injury problems, and that's actually one of the reasons why I have picked him as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul McGrath.
Yeah. Oh, good shout.
Paul McGrath. Legend.
I should have known that because Sky did a 1993 the best
that
year.
Was the year or something.
Well, they had
won it.
Who are Paul McGrath and also Paul McGrath, my lord, Paul McGrath, nice. Which you will still hear Villa's fans singing all the time,
yeah.
Especially at away games, you can hear him doing it all the time. So he was known as God at Villa, where he spent most part of his career, as I said, the Kumbaya chart, defied medical knowledge to play on, with basically no knees. He had no knees whatsoever. Played 163 times for United before Ferguson basically thought he wasn't good enough and bombed him out.
Oh, it's basically that he enjoyed spending too much time.
Yeah, there was a bit of a drinking culture at United at the time.
Brucey and Whiteside.
And Robson as well.
Brucey.
Went to Villa, played 250 times for Villa and 83 caps for Ireland as well. Captained him a couple of times.
Yeah.
I remember him playing against Italy when they beat him at USA 94, the 1-0 game. That's the first time he came to my prominence. Just for like a typical defender, like last ditch challenges, stuff like that. Blocked a shot of his head, according to Wikipedia, which I don't remember, but I do recall him being pretty heroic in his defending.
Yeah. Bearing in mind he's on the pitch there with Maldini, Baresi, all these great Italian defenders.
Alongside Phil Babb, if I remember rightly.
We'll talk more about that on my nomination.
Did a 4-4-2 interview a few years ago and admitted to playing whilst under the influence as well. So he was so good he could play pissed and still play well.
That's one for all the Sunday League.
And obviously, his alcoholism off the pitch was well documented, and his book, Back from the Brink, is probably the best football book I think I've written.
Wow.
Can't claim credit.
Yeah, you pulled the prop.
You've lost your accent, Paul.
No, it's alright. It's alright.
You've lost your colour.
Guess another beer is. it's a really good book. It's a really good book. And one of my nominations will come from that as well, because the book was so good, left an impression on me. But
top stuff.
Really, really bloody good defender. Class, was what I'd say.
So, Paul McGrath, nomination number one. Alright, Mike. Who have you got? Which Man United player have you got this week?
I've not gone for Henning Berg, although he did play a pivotal role in the treble season.
What about May?
David May.
Superstar's got more medals than Shearer. But this week I've actually gone for a player from a club I hate, but he was that good that he had to be nominated. I've gone for Il Gigante Buono, which means the gentle giant. I've gone for John Charles.
That is a great shout.
Was never booked or sent off. Equally adept as a centre half or a striker, so might give us some goals from the back.
Never booked or sent off. Everyone's
never
like
booked.
A pussy.
Oh no,
stuck in.
He was hard as he was.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
hard as well. You wouldn't have said that to his face. Played 38 times for Wales and scored 15 goals, including being at the heart of their 1958 quarter-final team.
Got beat by Brazil, didn't they?
He got injured for that game. Brazil won 1-0. A young lad called Pelé scored.
Yeah.
Don't know what happened to him. Started his career at Leeds, played 297 games, scoring 150 goals, which is incredible, bearing in mind half his games did come at centre-back.
Yeah.
One of the inaugural nominees to go into the English Football Hall of Fame, the first Welshman to go in, and he has a stand, a sports centre and a street in Leeds named after him.
So, can't argue with much of that. And he also played up front as well as centre-half.
Yeah, he's best loved though at Juventus.
He's royalty over there.
He won, he was British transfer record of £65,000 in 1957.
Yeah.
93 goals, 155 games, won 3 Scudettos, 2 Italian Cups, Italian Player of the Year. More incredibly, he was the first ever foreign Italian Player of the Year. He also was voted Juventus' greatest ever foreign player. When you bear in mind they've had Zidane, Platini, Boniek, Michael Laudrup,
Liam Brady.
Liam Brady.
Was Brady at Juve? I knew he was at AC. Give us that scoring record, because that's astonishing.
93 goals and 155
in Italy.
He's not
in
a centre back, is he?
No, he didn't. He played centre back.
I'll be honest, because I was
stick him up front for the second half or something.
I consider choosing him for when we move forward for our striker.
So that's dual roles.
That's how he
works. Like Gary Doherty.
Like Gary Doherty.
Spurs and Norwich.
Yes.
Just like Gary.
But again, we'll talk about that on the
show. If Joe's family listening, we're so sorry about that last comment.
Just because he's ginger, that's horrible. Doherty's a nice guy.
Oh dear. All right, okay.
He was also voted the greatest foreign player to play in Serie A, which takes in Maradona, Van Basten. Ridiculous.
Oh, bloody hell, that's ridiculous.
First ever non-Italian.
Luther Blissett.
First ever non-Italian to be inducted into the Azzurri Hall of Fame.
Luther Blissett put you off your sword there for a minute, didn't it?
Robbie Keane.
Next week we'll play a game of crap foreign players in Italy top trumps.
I think we might just have done that. Okay, Stu. Oh, sorry, mate.
He went on to play for Roma, Leeds again, Hereford, and Merthyr Tydfil.
And I love the way there can't be many players who played for Juve and Merthyr Tydfil.
Yeah, and he went on injuries to have an excellent goal scoring record. He was a gentleman.
Yeah,
a true legend of the game. Bit old school, but
how much would he be worth now?
If he was playing today. Oh.
If Darren Bent's worth 18 million,
he'd be on the bench.
Double that.
You need to have a confirmed position. Do himself no favours.
Is Gary Doherty still playing? Because he'd probably be just behind him.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's still in Norwich, I think, isn't he?
Cool.
There you
go. All right, Mr. Hoare. Which Wikipedia page are we going to read from this week?
This week, from the Wikipedia page, once rejected by rivals Inter Milan, I'm going to go for Franco Baresi.
Yeah. This is a tough category this week.
After being rejected by Inter Milan, he decided to attend trials for AC Milan, and I guess the rest is history, I suppose. He played 719 games in total for AC Milan.
Was that actually a quote from Wikipedia? And the rest is history, I suppose.
I put that bit myself. Played 719 games for AC Milan, making him a one-man club.
One-man club.
He must have been bloody good if he was the only person playing for the club.
Oh, he won 6 league titles and 3 Champions League by himself.
Sounds a bit like Mohamed Kallon of Kallon FC. Who transferred himself to a Chinese team, if you remember.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Very good. 6 league titles, 3 Champions League, to name but just a few of his achievements. He led the Milan team for the best part of a decade, in which arguably was the best back four in history.
Yeah.
Obviously, which included Maldini, Costa Curta, and Sassotti. My point was going to be, he would compliment Maldini in our back four.
But he ain't in there, so...
He's fucked now, isn't it?
So now we're going to have to get Colin Cooper in there to play alongside Stuart Pearce.
And Ian Warren, left midfield.
Oh, classic.
He had a left peg on him.
That's all fucked, isn't it?
All right, cool.
Franco Baresi,
a very good shout. It's going to need another big name to sit alongside these guys and stand any chance of punching him in the weight. I think I've got the man here. Two words, Franz Beckenbauer. He was known as Der Kaiser, which was the emperor. One of the greatest centre-halves, if not the greatest centre-half. Dan might have an argument against that in a minute. Ever to play the game. The best German footballer of all time. He's the first man ever to win the World Cup as a player and as a manager. As captain of West Germany, he became the first man to lift the World Cup as we know it today, the FIFA World Cup. Because after 1970, Brazil had won the Jules Rimet outright. They'd won it 3 times. They got to keep that. FIFA made a new trophy. First man to lift it, Franz Beckenbauer, in West Germany, 1974. He'd also led his country to the European Championships 2 years earlier, thus becoming the first captain to hold the European Championships and the World Cups concurrently. It hadn't happened before. During the 1970 World Cup, I mean, this guy, his commitment's legendary. In the World Cup semi-final against Italy and Mexico in 1970, he got fouled, fell, dislocated his shoulder. You had 2 substitutes back then. Both the substitutes had been used. He went off, told the doctor, "Put me in a sling, I'm going back on." He played the rest of the game and extra time in a sling. An unbelievable match, which they eventually lost 4-3 in a game that they
were going to say, did they win?
They lost it 4-3, match of the century, unbelievable game. Now, let me just, I'm not one for listening things, I know it's happened in the past. just listen to this, five Bundesliga, this is as a player, five Bundesliga titles, four German Cups, three European Cups, one Cup Winners' Cup, one Intercontinental Cup, three North American Soccer League titles, two
that's the big one.
For the New York Cosmos, two Transatlantic Cup titles, 103 international caps for West Germany. He's won the World Cup, runners-up and third-place medals. He's won the Ballon d'Or twice and placed runner-up twice. He won the World Cup Golden Ball for the best player in 1974. He was named the World Cup team of the tournament in three consecutive World
Cups. He's got a great CV.
As a manager, he's won the World Cup and come second. He's not being picked as a manager for this team, but he's done the business as a manager as well. Franz Beckenbauer, the Kaiser, or Der Kaiser, legend, deserves to be on this list. He's my man, Franz Beckenbauer.
I do remember the old owner of New York Cosmos wasn't very happy when he signed because he didn't realise he was a centre-back, so when he was stood at the back of the whole game, he was asking...
What's he doing? Get out and score goals.
Yeah.
Have you seen the film about the New York Cosmos, actually? Just side issue. It's called Once in a Lifetime.
That's a great story for this week, though.
Get it on DVD. Yeah, the Cosmos are coming back.
And the Kings returned as their director of soccer.
Eric Cantona.
When I heard Cosmos coming back, I thought it was the Cadbury's chocolate.
Oh, they were quite
excited, yeah. I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest.
Cool. Well, from Beckenbauer and the New York Cosmos to
the greatest centre-back to ever play the game.
And an Englishman, if I'm guessing correctly.
You are. Right. Yeah. I think by those two statements, you'll know exactly who I mean.
Is it Des Walker?
I've chosen Robert Frederick Chelsea Moore, better known as Bobby Moore. He is, without doubt, England's best player. I don't think there's really argument for that. He's got the best clip of all time, his tackle on Pelé, but let me give you some information. He played 544 times for West Ham, who were quite unpopular at the moment, but had a hell of a side in the early 1960s.
Quite unpopular?
They are quite unpopular now, aren't
they? They don't like to remind him.
It's a different word to unpopular.
They don't like to remind people of their 66 team, though,
no,
do they?
No, they don't.
You never hear him talking about
no,
it. Never.
No. He played 108 times for England, only scoring two goals. He actually replaced Malcolm Allison in 1958 in his debut for West Ham and actually never looked back. Allison never played again in the First Division, never played again for West Ham. And that's when he took the number six shirt, which pretty much anyone that wears now, an Englishman, plays at the back and thinks that they're Bobby. He was England captain at first in 1963 at the age of 22 and made permanent captain 2 years later in 1964 by Sir Ralph Ramsey.
Isn't that only 1 year later?
Sorry, it's 1 year later. Apologies, maths is bad there.
Oh, boredom over there.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Maths, please, in the corner. Jesus, he was so happy with it as well.
Yeah, I know.
He's trying to help, it benefits him.
Thanks. I've lost where I was now. Right,
spell it out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he also played county cricket for Essex youth team alongside Jeff Hurst. Well, I thought that happened a lot actually in the back in the day. He used to double up. He lifted the 1964 FA Cup and was successfully treated for testicular cancer just afterwards. He also was named Football Writers Association Football of the Year. And then obviously let's come to 1966 where he is the only England captain to lift the World Cup. He was also named BBC Sports Personality of the Year, which I'm probably confident he was more important to him.
I think he was the first footballer to win it as well.
He was the first, and it took 14 years, I think, or something long. It took a long time for another one to be named. He died in 1993, unfortunately, of cancer. And I just want two bits of things that were said about him. Sir Ralph Ramsey said of Moore, "My captain, my leader, my right-hand man. He was the spirit, the heartbeat of the team. A cool, calculating footballer I trust with my life. He was supreme professional, the best I ever worked with. Without him, England would never have won the World Cup." And the great Pelé commented, "He was my friend, as well as the greatest defender I ever played against. The world has lost one of the greatest football players and an honourable gentleman." His two goals, one against Poland in a 1-1 draw in January 66 and Norway in a 6-1 victory in June of 66.
Can you read the first quote again, the start of the first quote again?
"My captain, my leader, my right-hand man."
Isn't that what Richard Key said about Andy Gray before yesterday?
Well, he might have done, yeah. I don't know.
To be fair as well, if you needed a necklace, Bobby Moore would sort you out.
He was never charged
proved,
for that. Never proved.
Never charged.
So I give you Bobby Moore.
That's a good one. That's a good shout.
Very good.
That is a hard old pick.
Five, excellent. Can we just play like a 1-7... No, I'm sure
we're going to play Man City formation. Yeah. Just line up the back, line up the defence. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, everyone out there.
I don't even know who I'm picking.
Yet. We need you to help us pick a player from those five to go into our podcast 11. I don't think there's a wrong decision you can make here. No. So it really is down to
what it is. Paul McGrath.
Your personal choice.
Oh dear.
I'm tempted to vote for Paul McGrath.
They're all legends. They are all legends. Some of them have won more things, but they are.
One of them's German.
They've all got passion in their trophy locker.
One of them scored a lot of goals.
We've got legends everywhere. The vote will be up on the website, footballpodcast.co.uk. cast your vote, retweet, send to your friends. Let's get as many votes as we can this week and get a proper legend in the football podcast. We need to build some beef into that back.
I don't think a single one of our players so far has been the greatest in that position.
No,
which is brilliant.
No, okay.
So Paul McGrath's in.
Right, it's time for who are you, Jim?
Yeah, well, you're talking about legends. This guy could... He's a bit of a legend in his own right, but he could become a legend, I think. Ian Scott Holloway. Born in Bristol, 1963, making him 47 years of age. Played 18 years from 1981 to 1999. Midfielder. Started playing for Bristol Rovers, his hometown club. Played for him for 4 years, 100 appearances. Went on to play for Wimbledon, Brentford, Torquay, then back to Rovers for another 179 appearances. Then he went on to QPR as a player. Then back to Rovers again in 1996, so three different spells at the same club. Gasheads manager from 96 to 99, player manager, and then he turned just a manager for 2 years till 2001, when he left to take charge of QPR. Where he's quite known for his little stint there. It's where a lot of his famous quotes came out. Dan, I know you like the quotes.
Ollie-isms,
yeah, if you want. Actually got relegated with QPR in the first season, didn't he? Took you down from Championship to what was then League One.
He took over halfway through, so he
took on a team that was going down anyway. Managed to get you re-promoted in 2002 behind Plymouth Argyle.
Yes.
After a couple of playoffs.
We had a playoff final league before, didn't we?
At Cardiff, yeah. He actually left on Garner leave in 2006. And I didn't know this, right? Yeah. He left. The reason he left, he was put on Garner leave because there was a lot of rumours that he was going to take the Leicester job.
He was caught in the Leicester job.
Well, that's what was alleged by the club, and that was putting the players off, but it didn't go to Leicester. Ended up going to Plymouth in 2006, in June. While he was there, they got their first away win at Sunderland, and he offered to buy all the 700 fans who made the trip a beer. He said to him in the press conference, write me a letter, I'd love to buy you a beer. Don't know how many of that 700 did actually write him a letter. I'd have
1,500 of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. got a few in there. Make it a bottle, son. In 2007, he resigned to take over at Leicester City.
He did actually.
I think Milan Mandrić was probably there at the time. We must have been caught him a while. Actually wanted him as the manager. Got him relegated in 2008 and left.
Didn't go very well, that
didn't
move.
Go very well at all. Didn't go very well at all. After he left, he was now unemployed. Recently relegated manager with a bit of a reputation for courting other jobs whilst under contracts. He took a year out, and he's since said that it was a bad time in his career and he shouldn't have left Plymouth the way he did, and he let himself down, stuff like that. Anyway, took a year out, reflected, came back as Blackpool manager, ended up getting promoted.
He's done a bit.
They're ripping up the Premier League. They're playing well, aren't they?
Absolutely. Personal life's always quite interesting as well. Nursed his wife through cancer along that period. He's actually got three. He's got four children. Three of them are deaf.
Yeah.
When he was managing QPR, he actually commuted from Bristol to QPR every day to keep the kids in a special school down there, like a school for deaf down in Bristol. Also, it became a high-profile campaign on deaf issues and concerns because, obviously, with his comments, it's got him in the press, so they thought, right, we'll back onto that.
Yeah.
Lastly, a couple of, what did you call them?
Ollie-isms.
I've never heard that. Dan, the one you mentioned last week, I've got it in full. It's often mentioned, but I think it's worth talking about an ugly win. To put it in gentlemen's terms, if you've been out for a night and you're looking for a young lady and pull one, some weeks they're good looking, some weeks they're not the best. Our performance today wouldn't have been the best looking bird, but at least we got her in a taxi. She wasn't the best looking lady, we ended up taking her home. She's very pleasant, very nice, so thanks very much, let's have coffee. That's fantastic.
Top dog.
Other ones, smaller ones and more recent ones, he came out and in a press conference, he said that apparently it's my fault the Titanic sunk, to which everyone just sort of looked at him and went, what is he going on about? I love Blackpool, we're very similar, we both look better in the dark. This one is fantastic. If you're a burglar, it's no good poncing about outside somebody's house looking good with your swag bag ready. Just get in there, burgle them and come out. I don't advocate it, obviously, it's just an analogy. You had to put that on the end. And report said to him quite recently, Ian, have you got any injury worries? And he just looked at him and went, no, I'm fully fit, thanks, and walked off. This week, he's up against Alex Ferguson in the Premiership.
Yes, that equally lovable character.
Yeah, brilliant.
A little bit different, those two. But
Holloway, top man. Good stuff, Jim. Good stuff, mate. Right, let's try to find out how Port Vale are getting on under the management of Stu the manager.
It's an interesting one this week, mate. Obviously, following on from the 4-0 home win against Northampton, which we all heard about last week, we hosted middle of the table side Oxford United. After dominating the first 5 minutes of the game, pushing for early opener.
How can this sound like you're reading from Wikipedia still? You must have written this yourself.
Unless someone needs to start a Wikipedia thing for Stuart's career. That's what needs to happen.
And then you can read about an early opener. Unfortunately, though, Oxford hit back with a fantastic counter-attack. Their first and only shot on target for the whole game ended up in the back of the net with Tom Craddock making it 1-0. Disgusting, mate. Disgusting. Louis Dodds, right winger at the moment, increased his work rate on the wing. It was only a matter of time before something happened, to be honest. And it went his way in the 40th minute. Well worked run on the right before delivering an inch perfect cross for Loney Bruner from Liverpool, making it 1-0, taking the sides in level at half time.
Sorry, is this Stuart Hall or Stuart Hall?
Yeah.
Stuart Hall.
The famous BBC presenter. Sounds just like him.
Is it really? Come to Belgium.
No, he sounded good.
Go on, Stu, don't let me put you off.
After half time, bit of a non event. Neither side really pushing for a winner. After changing the tactics for a more attacking formation in the 70th minute, Mark Richards went on a couple of times, threw on goal, managed to shank both of them. So, unfortunately, final score 1-0.
Yeah. Okay.
And obviously, next up, I've got Bradford away.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we'll move on to our adopted team. So what we're going to do, because obviously there's five of us, squeezing five teams in every week, it's going to get a bit long. So what we'll do a couple each week. Mike, do you want to tell us about the Vicks? How they getting on?
There was late drama in Northwich at the weekend, playing Michelover Sports.
Yeah.
0-0 going into 5 minutes of injury time when Wayne Riley popped up to give Vicks the win.
Get in.
So 1-0, now up to seventh in the league, 2 points off Marine in fifth place in the playoffs. Tonight, or Monday as it will be, they're playing Ashton United away. A win will put them back into the playoffs. Things are locking up.
Good stuff. This is all good news. Stu, how's have the Grashat played? I had a rumour they might have played.
After pissing around in Turkey for a couple of weeks, mate, they've turned out. Away at Feyenoord this weekend. And
okay.
They won 1-0.
They beat Feyenoord.
88th minute.
Who scored?
Some guy called Brokoff.
Brokoff?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. And now leaves them in 12th, mate. So looking comfortable in the middle of the table, mate.
That's good stuff.
I reckon they'll be all right this season.
Good. I'll very quickly mention Peterhead. They got absolutely dicked on in the Scottish Cup. Remember they drew 0-0 with St Mirren?
Yeah.
They played them in a replay, got done 6-1. Apparently, it was flattering to St Mirren. That's what I'm told. But bad result. But they played Ayr United, remember, who went top of the league? Away from home, they went 2-0 down. Ayr got given two penalties, which they converted. So 2-0 down at half-time. They came back in the second half, drew 2-2, so a bit of resilience there. They're still in seventh place and they're doing alright. So it's going okay, and we'll have more adopted team next week. Right, okay, it's time for our betting section, Ugo Ehi Odds. Last week we picked Norwich, Charlton, Cardiff and Huddersfield. Norwich won, Charlton won, Cardiff won, and Huddersfield Mike drew.
Who nominated Dan?
That'd be you.
Second week running.
You're on a hat trick of failures, mate.
I am.
120 quid down.
I'm just trying to teach kids that betting don't pay.
Well, it don't when you're putting in the hat.
However, sitting and talking about football in a pub does.
Got Paul Merson for that. He's doing a fine job. Believe it.
Right, okay, let's go round the table. Who have we got for the Acker this week, Stu?
I'm going to go Chesterfield home win against Bradford.
Yeah?
Yes.
Good stuff. Okay, they're doing all right. Jules are playing tomorrow night, so hopefully
See, this was before I saw they had a Tuesday night game, but yeah. No matter what the result of Gillingham, I'm pretty
sure. Well, they'll be stung after the thrashing we'll give them tomorrow.
Something like that, mate. I might change that then.
All right, Dan.
I've got Hearts to win at home to St Johnstone, who beat me in the cup this month. So they'll be up for a beating, and they just beat Rangers.
The Jambos.
Yeah.
Pick the Jambos. All right, Mike.
Who's going to let us down this week?
I'm going for Swansea to beat Leighton Orient, so lump your money on Leighton Orient.
If you don't get that right, then you do need to see someone, seriously.
That is actually a decent pick, I would have thought. Okay, Jim, who have you got?
Fleetwood Town, quite high in the conference, to beat Forest Green, who are not very high in the conference.
Cool.
At home.
All right, and I've gone for the biggest nailed-on win I could find, which is Rotherham to beat Stockport County in League 2. So hopefully, because we've now got five in the ACCA, we'll drop those in. And we'll go from there. But we'll report back on that next week's show. Pub ammo time, Mike.
I think this is maybe my favourite football story ever that's come out over the weekend.
All right.
Newcastle United, they don't like Mike Ashley very much, do they?
No.
The fans, they want a new owner.
Yeah.
Reports are coming that Mike Ashley has been in talks with none other than Vincent Kennedy McMahon, owner of the World Wrestling Entertainment, or Federation, as it was.
True.
They're denying
Warrior.
It would be amazing. I can see Andy Carroll up front with The Undertaker. It would be fantastic. I mean, if
the press conferences would be brilliant. How do you think they're going to do it against Sunderland? I think Sunderland have got no chance in hell.
I mean, going to open a can of whoopers.
Newcastle are famous for firing managers. Can you imagine Vince McMahon coming out on TV saying, "You're fired"?
They do it every week.
It'd be brilliant. It would be amazing.
It would make an already preposterous football club even more preposterous.
If you think of a pantomime of the team, it is Newcastle United.
Yeah.
So, how more... bring him into. I would consider taking them on as a second team.
I think we all would.
If they had Vinnie Mack.
We all would. Dan would be all over it. He's shaking his head.
I'd consider a season ticket. I walk up there every week.
I'd look forward to the time when he got into an argument with Alan Shearer. Alan Shearer somehow became the commissioner of the club, and every week they fought over power.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant. New section. There is so much scope for that. It is unbelievable. All right, okay. We have a new section, guys.
We do.
We have a new section because Mr. Ferdinand is still shaking his head after the McMahon revelation. It's called... What's it called, Dan?
Don't know.
Come down with me.
You bloody love that title.
We've done there, Dan?
As you can probably tell, I never picked it. But I'm going to go with it.
Okay, explain it for us.
Basically, what we decided to do is just to bring a little bit more of my personality out into the show. I would just rant for a brief amount of time about what annoys me within football. And things annoy me every single week.
The waiter that just came over and asked if we want more drinks annoy you? He's not come to dinner.
I'm going
to
rant about him next week.
He's next week's coming.
Just really briefly, I actually had a runner-up this week. It was going to be Eric Cantona for smoking in the ad in the Return of the Cosmos. As you're talking about a professional football team and he's got a big Cuban in his mouth. But anyway...
Daniel, do you like smoking?
Well, I do, but I'm not a professional footballer or running for a football team.
He's not coming to dinner.
He's not. He might still, but the person who isn't coming to dinner this week is Stoke City manager Tony Pulis.
Right.
What?
The cup.
What?
No. Quite
take your hat off, Tony, then you can come in.
Quite simply, his preposterous post-match interview after their 2-0 defeat to Fulham. Basically, what it all comes around is Clint Dempsey puts quite what if it would have been Messi would have been touted as one of the greatest first touches in the history of the game to put himself through on goal. Ryan Shawcross, not really on purposely, but takes him out, penalty and a sending off. Pulis reacts after the game by saying that he thought Dempsey went down very easily. Well, easily if a 13-stone English defender falls on you. I'd like to thank Simon for that one, because that's what we were tweeting about. So if you saw my tweets around that time, you'd have seen my anger at that. So he ain't coming to dinner because he can't see and he's an idiot. Your man took him out. It was a penalty and a red card. Simple as that. Just accept it and get on with it. But luckily, he did shake Mark Hughes' hand.
Yep, he did.
Good.
He did. All right, so that's not bad. So the first one on your list is Tony Pulis.
Yes.
Class and arse time.
He's meant to be Stuart, but he's had to go home.
Stu's had to go. So what we'll do, I'll go through what he's put. His class is Marlon King.
Yep.
Apparently he was getting, and you could tell me much better than this, he was copping it on Saturday.
He was getting absolutely dogs abused to the on Sunday, this was yesterday, to the point where I was like actually feeling a bit sorry for him.
Yeah.
Literally, the QPR fans weren't seeing anything other than anti-Marlon King songs.
Yeah.
came over to take a corner and stuff like that. And I actually just a twinge of just like, oh, the poor bastard, because he must get that every week. Yeah. Stu's put him on his class because when he scored, he didn't celebrate at all.
Okay.
He just sort of, because it would have been so easy for
he
anyone
could have given it a big
to
one,
go straight back to the fans that have been absolutely pelting him, yeah, and give it a little bit, but he didn't. So,
cool.
Whether that means he should be class, I don't know.
No, I don't know.
That's Stuart's thinking for you.
Yeah. All right.
I think Richard Keys and Andy Gray probably are from this class.
Well, there is us.
Then if Kay would agree with that.
There is us. I'm sure you've all read or seen or heard of this.
There's also a clip going around of them about 10 years ago.
Yeah. Laughing at the Women's Cup final.
Yeah, the Women's Cup. Have a YouTube.
Get on
that,
YouTube
that's quite
and look
funny
for that. Yeah, so the outburst from Richard Keys and Andy Gray. First thing we need to clarify. It was off mic. The mics were on, they weren't on air, and they didn't, you know, they didn't expect it to be recorded and sent out. Somebody, for whatever they said, has stitched them up.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about this. They've been tucked up like a couple of kippers. Now, you're arguing, you know, whether you think it's right or wrong, you know, they've been tucked up. Now, the views, I think, are a bit more questionable. So they've had a go at this Sean Massey, who was a lot female.
What they've said, it's not actually that bad, is it?
She hadn't done anything at this point. She hadn't even, at the start of the game, Keys basically said someone better go down and explain offside to her.
Yeah, it was just a bit.
And then she proceeded to give an absolutely spot on decision, which helped Liverpool to their first goal. Now, all of Molyneux would have been against that. You know, the fans would have been given a load of stick. It would have been easier for her to have given the offside decision.
Yeah.
She didn't. She was in the right position. She got it right. And Andy Gray and Rich Keys made some comments about Karen Brady as well. Karen Brady's come back today and given them both barrels in the press, which is quite interesting. But so they're Stu's arse of the week.
Well, it's the old boys club, innit?
I mean, and they've since, just before we went, come out to record the show, the news broke through Mirror Football that they've been suspended this week. So they're not going to be on Monday Night Football tonight. So they're the arse of the week. Right, we'll wrap up the show this week. Join us on the website, which is getting better every week. Anybody wants to write a blog for us, by the way, get in touch with us. The website is www.footballpodcast.co.uk. Email us with any blogs, comments, suggestions for the show. banter@footballpodcast.co.uk. We're all on Twitter @footballpodcast.
We are flying on Twitter.
We're doing alright, yeah. Football Podcast, Simon Head, Jim Staples, Michael Coxon, Stu_the manager, and Dan Ferdinand. We're all on there. That pretty much wraps up. The final word I'll leave with you, Jim.
Yeah, Annika Rice, British television presenter and host of 1990's Smash Hit Challenge Annika, is now a beekeeper in Pontefract.
Speak to you next week.
Bye.